Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Well, next week here in Illinois and a lot of other states, there will be a primary, and a lot of attention has been focused, understandably so, on the presidential contest on both sides. But when people go to the polls here in our area, they will also find some area races there and area names there. And here this week on the program, we want to devote a little bit of attention to two of them at least. Here in the 105th district in the Illinois House, here in East Central Illinois, there are two Republicans that will be competing for their party's nomination, the incumbent, Shane Cultra, and our guest, David Tomlinson. He is currently the president of the Champaign Unit for Board of Education. He is challenging Mr. Cultra, who now has run, I believe, three times and has never had a challenger. And I think that conventional wisdom about this race is that it's likely there will be no Democrat on the ballot this fall, and it is very likely that the primary essentially will be the election. Whoever wins this primary is most likely going to go on to represent the 105th district. So for Republicans in this district, this is significant. This primary is significant. So we're really pleased that Mr. Tomlinson could be here with us this morning, and then Shane Cultra will be with us tomorrow. It's possible that he may have to do it by telephone, depending on what the weather is like, but we want to offer people in the 105th the same opportunity to hear both candidates and talk with both candidates, and that's what we're all about here this morning. Just a quick mention of some more background on our guest. As I said, in 2005, he ran for and was elected to the Champaign School Board and is currently the president. He is a firefighter with the City of Champaign Fire Department. He also has worked as a civilian researcher for the U.S. Army's Engineering Research and Development Center in Champaign, and then also spent time in the Air Force. He also was a firefighter. Was based at Rantoul when there still was an Air Force base there. And we're pleased that he could be with us. So questions are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
Good morning. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Just to start, tell us what you're interested in, interest is in running for the Illinois House.
Well, I think the overall state government in Illinois has been a disaster for the last couple of years. I think that's universally thought around Illinois. I think certainly you can blame some of that on the leadership with the governor and the Speaker of the House and the Senate president fighting a lot amongst themselves. So I think as Republicans, however, we need to be able to come to the table and work together instead of working against both sides. And I think that's something I bring to the table to be able to do that. And when I looked at the 105th race, I think as a Champaign County resident for over 20 years now, I don't think we've had the representation that we need in the state house. And I think that we can be more effective as legislators and be engaged in Springfield and also throughout the district. And this is a very large and diverse geographic district. It runs all the way up to Clifton, which is on I-57, and the Dwight area, a third of Pontiac, Watseka. This is a very large district, and some of Savoy and Champaign County. So I look forward to serving the citizens of the 105th, and I think I've been able to bring a lot of people together with the schools lately and hope to continue to do that at the state level.
We have yet to have the governor deliver the two big sorts of policy speeches that he gives early on in the session, the state of the state and the budget, and apparently that's going to happen in about 3 weeks now. Mm-hmm. I think we know when that's going to be. So we'll hear what he has to say. Let me ask you as a general kind of question, if we said, okay, you can give us your version of in 2 minutes or less of the state of the state, what do you think particularly are the big challenges facing the state and then also facing the legislature?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably the number one challenge facing our state has got to be education funding. We have the public school system in Illinois is currently 49th in terms of state-provided education funding. And I think you see that in our statewide achievement, though at the ACT level, it's higher than the national average across the state. But I think we have got to have some form of relief and funding from the state that allows the local school districts to make decisions and allows them to spend their very limited property tax dollars in an effective way. Schools are funded very inequitably in Illinois. The property tax system, if you look at schools up in the Chicago suburbs that might spend $20,000 per student because they're very property tax wealthy student, to the Champaign County folks, Champaign spends approximately $9,000 per student per year, and you look at some of the downstate, and they're 4,000 or 5,000, and that's a horrendously inequitable way to fund schools. So I think we've got to look at property tax reform. Certainly, that's property taxes are a local issue, but the state continues to provide unfunded mandates. We just had a school board meeting the other night where our unfunded mandate from the state for special education funding was almost $8 million for Champaign schools alone. And so you multiply that throughout the state, that's a very significant amount of money. And, you know, there are several districts in the 105th area that don't even come close to $8 million for a total budget. So we look at that, and I see that as something the state needs to do. And they don't even fund the level that their own advisors tell them they should fund at the foundation level. We did get a little increase this year, but it's certainly about 1,000 less still than they recommend be funded.
Yeah. I want to spend a little bit more time with this, but just on the more general issue, certainly the legislature has been struggling the past few years with the very basic issue of expenditures and revenues and mm-hmm. what they feel that they need to do, what they feel they need to fund, and the money, where is the money going to come from to do that? Is there any way that you can think of, and I would feel pretty certain that you'd say you wouldn't favor a tax increase, but short of that, anything that you could think of that would give the legislature more money to work with that could actually generate more revenue?
Well, I think there's three things. It's only you look at both sides of the economic equation, the revenue and the expenses side, and I think you need to look at the expenses side first because we've spent a lot of money on programs that we don't have the money to support. The governor's All Kids program is a great idea. It's a feel-good idea to do that, and I wish we could do that, but the reality is there's no money for that. Preschool education for every child in Illinois is a superb idea. In fact, the research shows that kids with early childhood education do better throughout schools, but there's no funding to pay for that, and we continue to create new programs without a definite funding stream. So we've got to look at freezing expenses and paying the bills we have. I think the pension bills, for example, with the state university system that were put on hold was a terrible decision by the legislature because all that does is rob Peter in the short run to pay Paul in the short run, and we're going to be downstream in the same problem or worse with pension payments that we need to make. So pay the bills you have, pay the Medicaid bills you have, pay the Medicare issues, get that caught up. We need to look at capital revenues because the infrastructure is crumbling. So I certainly have been on record many times as saying I would support limited increase in casino funding. I think personally that is a voter issue. However, I think I said the other day in an interview that if there's a need for a casino in Danville, then the voters in Vermillion County should be able to have one. I think there certainly should be a licensing process, a limited amount of casinos you should be able to have. But we talk a lot about the two different states in Illinois, the state of Chicago and the state of everyone else. And we need to make sure that we are providing an equitable state government for everyone. I don't think we do that right now. Mm-hmm. And specifically in the area of taxes, I would not favor a tax increase. I would entertain a tax swap as long as there was an overall decrease in the property taxpayers, overall taxes paid.
In Washington, one of the things that they're now talking about is economic stimulus. Mm-hmm. What can be done to try to stimulate the national economy? And it seems that one of the big things that's on the agenda is some kind of tax rebate. They're actually talking about writing a check and sending one to everybody. And perhaps they're thinking about some other things as well. If you look at what's within the power of, say, the Illinois legislature, mm-hmm. are there things that you think that state government can do in the state of Illinois to stimulate the economy of the state of Illinois?
Well, it certainly wouldn't come in the form of a tax rebate. Our state income taxes are extremely low now anyway compared to a lot of states. A 3% rating is fairly low. So I don't think that's going to be something that the state can do. I think economic stimulus can come from business reinvestment in the communities that they're in. I think we look at Champaign and the county specifically with the university's economic engine here being able to grow and reinvest our research dollars from the state that they have, that there's been some research dollars for the university. The BP project comes to mind recently. We need to make sure that we're continuing their R&D investments in the university. And I think that generates economic stimulus. Look at the incubator on the South Farms and the business incubator in the research park has really stimulated our economy very highly in Champaign County. And I think we can look at the northern parts of the district where it's much more of an agricultural base, and those parts of the district are funded, are really the economic engineers, agriculture, and they grow the great stuff that U of I does research on, and we can have a symbiotic relationship there. I'm not sure the state is the right place to generate economic stimulus. I think that people themselves generate economic stimulus with solid relationships with both management and labor, with workers' comp legislation that's effective for everyone, that doesn't favor one side or the other, and also tort reform.
Let me just real quick introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580, Dave Tomlinson. He is a firefighter with the City of Champaign. He also is the president of the Champaign Unit for Board of Education, and he is on the ballot next week in the Republican primary in the 105th House District, challenging the incumbent, Shane Cultra. And questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the big issues that preoccupied the General Assembly actually has been preoccupying them going back in, even until last fall, was funding for mass transit in the Chicago area, and concerns that the CTA needed money, and if not, they were actually going to cut back on services. And for at least people in the Chicago area, that's a big deal. Maybe we downstate, we'd say, well, it's not quite as important for us, but if you're concerned about the state as a whole, you have to give that some consideration. And so there was a lot of wrangling about how it is that you were going to get a deal to provide some support to the CTA and then do something for downstate in order to get all the downstate legislators who might say, well, this is really nothing to me and to my district, to get them to sign on. What do you think about how that all went down and what was worked out?
Well, I'm glad, actually, that the rest of us didn't have to end up paying. I think in the solution that was put forth, the tax increase in the Chicago area, I think certainly at least allowed the people that use the service to pay for it, which I think is a good thing. I think the governor's senior cut was a great, again, PR thing. I'm not sure. You know, it's hard to say that if someone makes $5 million a year, they should have a cut, or $500,000 a year, they should get free public transportation. That's a tough thing to come to grips with. But I really think the downstate folks have got to look at Chicago. Chicago is the biggest engine, of course, in our state. They bring the dollars to our state, and we certainly need to support Chicago. But the CTA needs to be run more efficiently and effectively. And if it's not being able to provide the services that at the cost, they need to look internally at what's going on, why they can't do that. Is it because the state is not providing the infrastructure, or is it because there's some issue that they're not allowing – that their ridership is down? Mm-hmm. Is the ridership down because the service isn't good? Are they not on time? Look at those things first. And state bailouts of public transportation from the federal government, Amtrak, is certainly an example of that. If ridership goes up and you create the best, I think if you create the best mass transit system, people are going to use it. Look at the Washington, D.C. Metro. I used to travel to D.C. a lot, and I use the Metro all the time because it's clean, it's safe, it's effective. It was always on time, and I think it was, at least at the time I was using, it was run very well. And I don't think people had an issue with riding the Metro in D.C.
Let's talk with the caller. They changed their mind. If people are interested in calling and talking with our guest, you can do that, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Just for a second to return to the topic of gambling, you said that perhaps you would be okay with a limited increase in casino gambling as a way of generating some more revenue for the state. I think that gambling is something that makes some people kind of uncomfortable, and certainly there are concerns about the fact that the more casinos there are, the more opportunities there are for gambling, that you may be, in a sense, there's only so many people who are going to gamble, and the more opportunities, that means that each individual place is going to take in less, and so you have people complaining that if I have a casino now and somebody lets you open one across the street, well, then you're siphoning off my business. When you say limited, I guess I'm wondering, well, what exactly does that mean?
My mother goes to Las Vegas a couple times a year. I'm personally not a gambler by any stretch of the imagination. But she goes, and I recall when before Indiana had, she's from, we're from Indiana, grew up there. Before they had riverboats in Indiana, she would come to Peoria a couple times a year to gamble. And if do I want to take stuff from neighboring states if they're going to bring revenue to Illinois? Absolutely. I've been an Illinois resident for 21 years now, so I think that's a, that from that perspective, it's a great idea. I know the fire chief in both Peoria and East Peoria, and they share the revenues from the infrastructure side for the casino there. They have both expressed to me that it has been a great thing for the infrastructure and public agencies and bringing in dollars. So I think from that perspective, it's a great idea. And I certainly am sensitive to not expanding it to the point of making the availability of the potential for abuse and those types of things there. And I honestly think there's a level of that the state government shouldn't be the nanny. We hear about nanny states all the time. I don't think the state government should be the nanny state in that. And if people want to do that, I'm certainly supportive of limited in this, 2 to 3 more. I can't imagine. There's certainly going to be a point of a failure there or a break-even point that we can't expand beyond that. So right now I think that the state has certainly down by St. Louis and in Peoria and up in Aurora, Joliet area. But I can see one in Danville or even further downstate than that.
Okay. I want to get back to the thing, the very first thing that you talked about, and that was school funding.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me, for about as long as I can remember, candidates for the legislature and members of the legislature have said exactly what you said. They said we've got a problem with the system that we have now. We have these significant inequities between the wealthiest districts and the districts that have less. We have concerns about property taxes and that being the main way we fund schools. And so people have been talking about doing something different, some kind of swap that would provide property tax relief but continue to provide money for schools. And this gets to be very, very difficult because some people say, well, you could do that. It could be revenue neutral. Other people say, well, I don't believe that. And people who say, well, if you say you're going to increase income taxes and use that as a way to fund schools and that as a trade-off, we're going to decrease your property taxes. I know people say, well, I don't believe that for a minute, that my property taxes are going to go down. I believe that if I sign on a plan like that, I'm going to end up paying more taxes. And, you know, people have been talking about this kind of thing being a great idea, as I say, for as long as I can remember. And yet it doesn't happen. And it seems that often it seems that Republicans, and it's been the Republicans in the collar county, have really stood in the way of this getting anywhere out of the talking stage. Mm-hmm. How do you think that this gets done where, you know, everybody says it's a great idea, but politically it just seems like a non-starter?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in the fear. I mean, you expressed my fear with the consumption and the fair tax plan. Huckabee's been talking about that and others. I'm very fearful of a plan like that. That's exactly what happened with the lottery. We're going to give you $600 million or so for education, but we take it right out of the general fund. So there's really not a net increase from the legislature. And there's a pot of money over here sitting, so it's a dangerous thing for any politician, I think, in Springfield now or in national politics, that pot of money. It was talked about last night in the debates a little bit. But you know, if you look at the collar counties and Cook County particularly, I don't know specifically which counties, but Cook County is assessed at a different rate, a little bit lower rate. We're assessed at a third of our value down here and downstate. And so there's a little bit different tax rates system, and I think that's probably the biggest hold because the Cook County and the higher property tax wealth, collar counties up there don't want an increase in income tax because they're already paying essentially lower for the most part, property taxes because of the rate that they're assessed at. And I think it's 25% versus 33% in Cook County specifically. It might even actually be 15% of the assessed value. But I think we've got to figure out a way to do it. And, you know, Senator Frerichs, House Bill 750, I know he's been pushing through the Senate. I just can't remember the corresponding Senate bill number for that one. But the problem with it is it's not revenue neutral. And there's no corresponding, and the danger is it is nothing ventured, nothing gained. So that's why I really believe if you don't have in stone some kind of relief on one side or the other, all you're doing is potentially having the property owner who's already paying double burden because they get property taxes, they get income taxes, they get everything else, and you're not going to see any net savings, so it's not going to benefit anyone. It might give some more money to the schools, but it's not going to ultimately, people are going to start moving out of the state because they can't afford the property taxes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really concerned that if we don't have some kind of decrease and ironclad guarantee, that's the only bill I would support, is something that had an ironclad guarantee that the property side was going to be reduced, and for property owners, the net was going to be lower overall taxes. That's the only way I would support an income tax increase of any stretch of an imagination on that side. You know, the other thing with school funding, though, if we can get rid of some of those unfunded mandates and put it right back, the No Child Left Behind Act, great idea, horrendous implementation, the high-stakes testing that goes on in school districts every day, we've got to move away from all of those mandates from the government and allow the decision to be made by local boards. And if the state wants to provide something, they provide the money for it. Yeah. Ultimately,
well, just to be clear, so what you're talking about essentially is that there should be, you would like to see a decrease in property taxes, mm-hmm. but then the issue is, well, where are we going to get the money for the schools? You would say that what we're going to have to do is on the other side, it would have to come from income taxes.
I can see a very minor increase in income tax for that purpose, and the reason I say that is I think income taxes would spread that burden across everyone. Potentially right now, property owners who don't have kids in the district, who don't really have, or in any district, are paying the lion's share of the education costs for children throughout the state. If we were to look at the property tax issue and even the state fully funded the foundation level, again, it's $1,000 higher than the recommendation from the State Board of Education was $1,000 higher than the last funding was. And so if they could fund $1,000 more on the foundation level from the state, which comes from state income tax, that would lower the property taxes by default, actually, in the area of the school. So I think that's the way to do that.
Well, again, I want to invite people who are listening, if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And if it would be a long-distance call, you're in the surrounding area, you can use the toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. And our guest is David Tomlinson. He is a Republican candidate for the 105th House District here in East Central Illinois. There will be a primary in this district. There are two Republicans that are competing for the party's nomination. Dave Tomlinson is one, and the other is the incumbent, the current representative in the 105th, Shane Cultra. He'll be on the program tomorrow morning. We'll do the same thing and give you a chance to ask questions. Our guest, Dave Tomlinson, is the president of the Champaign Unit 4 Board of Education. He's also a firefighter in the city of Champaign. And questions are welcome. I want to go back to the subject of, you said, for school districts like yours, one of the big problems is unfunded mandates. Mm-hmm. That is, that the state of Illinois says to you, you must provide these services.
Correct.
But we're not going to give you any money. Or maybe we'll give you some money, but we're not going to give you what it's going to cost to mm-hmm. to cover it. And what your example was special education. Now, And am I remembering right now, you're saying your annual bill to provide special education is?
About $15
million. $15 million. Yeah. And the state of Illinois gives you?
It's not just the state. It's also some federal dollars there. But our total dollars from sources other than taxes are around other than the taxes that we levy here, around $8 million.
Okay. So you got to come up with $7 million.
Yeah, we ultimately have to come up $7 to $8 million a year for that. And, but let me just say that I absolutely think we should be providing the services. You know, in fact, we provide services for not just Champaign School District, for multiple other school districts around, because being the largest school district around, many, many smaller school districts just don't have the capability to provide services. So we certainly, I think the number is 50 to 100 kids that we provide services that are outside of our school district for, that we pay for, and then there's certainly some laws that, that deal with who pays for what, and that's fine. And even the private schools, we provide services for those kids. And if so, we've got we have a great special education department. We've got some great programs. I'm absolutely proud that we have those programs. I do think that the state needs to pony up the more of the dollars because they require us to do those things.
Well, then I guess this leads to the question that it, some people, I suppose, would be concerned that if the mandates weren't there, that districts wouldn't be providing the service, and maybe they would say, understandably, they would say, well, we don't have the money. We can't. Yeah, okay, maybe we can provide $8 million worth. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, we can't do $15 million worth, and without the mandate, the service, there are places where the needed service just wouldn't be delivered.
Well, I think that's probably true in smaller districts already, because they don't have the money, and they rely on some of the larger districts that have services available to do that. And so I can't ever see a district like Champaign with the size of our district saying we're not going to serve anybody. Public education at its root is free and accessible to everyone. So I think the genesis of public education was we want to provide education to anybody. We don't have the luxury or the desire to say no to anybody that comes to the doors of the Champaign School District or any other public school district. So we take people where they're at, and we educate them from that point. And so I think that's obviously going to continue. So I can't see that happening personally.
Well, we do have a caller here, someone in Urbana. We'll talk with them. Line number one.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
It seems that whenever there are elections, there's always a lot of talk about the inadequacy of funding of our schools. And yet, in the periods between that, there seems to be very little happening. I'm a bit confused about in Champaign, in particular, where the economy seems to be booming with all the retail and the malls on Prospect Avenue and in downtown, that hasn't been reflected. The revenues generated there haven't been reflected in the apportionment of funds to schools. And, you know, teachers are still out groveling for funds to pay for pencils in Champaign. And so there seems to be a disconnect in raising tax revenues and them actually eventually getting to the schools per se. And switching that to the state, I don't have really much more confidence that that will eventually wind up in the schools either. I wish you would comment on that.
Well, thank you for that question. I think you're absolutely right that the Champaign is growing at a fairly fast pace. We don't receive property taxes from a lot of the revenue generated that you're referring to is more maybe the sales tax revenues. We certainly, when let's say there's new property, there's $200 million or so in the last couple of years, about each year of new construction. And when new construction is assessed, it goes on the tax rolls almost 2 years later. So we technically don't see any increase, or any school district for that matter, increase in new construction dollars until they've been open for a year, and then the assessed value, because you're paying taxes in arrears. So we don't see any revenues from that growth for a while. TIF districts come into play, whether we see the full amount of revenues, if there's new growth, for example, the M2 project and all the projects in downtown Champaign.
Well, that's exactly the point. Lots of things are justified based upon getting more resources for the schools, and then they go elsewhere. Certainly the increase in sales revenues generated in Champaign that have not gone to the schools initially were justified, as is are the TIF proposals to go to the schools. So, either we stop using the schools as the justification for all of these changes and handing out money to generate money that doesn't go to the schools, or that the money is actually channeled to the schools where it's needed. I mean, when Champaign is, you know, found themselves, a very cushy state, financial state, very little of that money went to the schools. You know, they bought all sorts of other things and other city personnel, but it wasn't going to, you know, pay for pencils and paper in the Champaign schools.
Well, the current way of and I agree with you, as a city employee, there are two different tax issues here, really. The way the tax system in our state works is that every taxing district, and Illinois, by the way, is got more systems of taxing units of taxing government than just about any other state in the union, and I think it's up around 6,000 individual taxing bodies. So if you look at your tax bill, I know mine, and I don't even live within the city of Champaign. I have a Champaign address, but live just outside the city. I have like 15 different taxing bodies on my tax bill, if I remember. And the sales tax revenues don't go. TIF revenues, the only thing that comes, there's a hold harmless provision or make whole provision of what we would have received. We still do get from the TIF district. The TIF districts, however, have never been designed for school revenues. They've been designed for reinvestment in city revenues. And honestly, most school people TIF districts are not liked much by park districts typically or school districts throughout the state because their revenues go to the municipality versus the other taxing bodies. There are hold harmless provisions for that allow us to collect what we would have collected. But the other thing in Champaign County is there's the property tax extension limitation law, or tax caps. Our tax amounts keep going down, so we certainly don't receive the revenues that we would receive had there not been tax caps. Now, taking my school board president hat off for just a second, as a candidate, tax caps are a good thing in most cases. For the schools, they are not a good thing. They have been very devastating to many school districts where they're at, but overall to the overall economy, they're a very good thing.
I appreciate the comments of the caller. I have somebody else I want to get to, and we've got about 15 minutes left. Very quickly, as a general kind of question, the state constitution says something like I don't remember what the wording is, the majority of the preponderance of the funding for education should come from the state government.
Correct.
And I guess people have argued about exactly what that means. Some people say, well, that really what that means is that 51% of education funding should come from the state government. And there are other people who say, no, that's not what it means. And we know that it's a lot less mm-hmm. than that. Would you like to see more money coming from, you know, we've talked about particularly the problem of many school districts don't have adequate resources based on their property tax mm-hmm. to put behind their kids. So would you like to see the state funding a greater percentage of the education?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about Champaign, and our taxes are fairly low. In the grand scheme of comparatively, most people are saying, no, my tax bill is high. But I'm referring to tax rates comparatively to other areas. If we look at Iroquois County, I was talking to someone up there a week or so ago. Actually, it's been before the Wadsika flood, so it hasn't been a week. We talked about their taxes, and their taxes, you know, my tax is around $4,000, and if I lived in the city, it would be about $5,500 to $6,000. Their taxes were $5,000 on a home half the size of mine. And around 60% of at least of your property taxes go to the school. And so for smaller districts, it's horrendous that the money that they pay comparatively to some of the large places like us. It was unbelievable to hear some of the high taxes that they're paying and the state has got to specifically for the smaller districts that don't have the property tax wealth. Come up with their fair share. And that's what that foundation level that the state legislature passed and as ISBE, the Board of Education, has been recommending for years, that's what that is all based on. We've got to come up with different ways to fund it because larger, you know, Bloomington, the Normals, the Champaigns, the Urbanas, they don't have it near as bad as some of the smaller districts because of the sheer volume of dollars that they have available. Our budget is around $95 million in Champaign. And a smaller district, the 50% idea is not even close to what the state provides now. And it's a bigger burden on the smaller districts than it is the larger ones.
Let's talk to somebody else here in Champaign. This line number two. Hello.
Hi. All politics being local before I do more than listen, it's been a great conversation. What office are you running for?
I'm running for the state legislature in the 105th district state representative.
Okay. I don't believe I'm in your district, but I want to say I commend you for talking about education. I really do, because as someone who has been a longtime taxpayer and a voter since I think my first election was 1976, I helped pass the change in the Constitution which said state government will fund whatever, the preponderance. And I have seen the state, due to perhaps politics being local, behave irresponsibly ever since then. And I just commend you for all the issues you've mentioned. Smaller school districts such as Unity to the south of us really suffered. And it took a very large tax hit for them to build their new grade school. Well, it just so happens that, you know, they had leaking roofs and things like that. So, and in Champaign and Danville and some of the larger areas, I don't think people understand the burden on education that just comes from being a modern mobile society. People should be able to move, and people from lower socioeconomic statuses should be allowed to move. But when you are a district that gets probably 100 or more move-ins to your district every year, it can create an interesting situation in terms of what you've called unfunded mandate, but I think is just the obligation of the schools to provide quality education. I will admit my bias. I am a lowly employee of the Champaign Unicorn School District, but people who are not in the schools do not understand the scope and depth of the effort made by all school districts to educate students. And if the state would just fund the way I think it should, property taxes would become very low. And the main thing that I have, and I hate to say this because I'm a university brat, is the higher education budget needs to be a separate part of the discussion when it comes to funding, say, K through 12. The university needs to be separate because so often people will say, well, we're doing record this and record that, but it's going to development projects frequently from private centers for the university. So I just, you are doing an outstanding job, and I want to thank you.
Well, I appreciate those comments. And there's no such thing as a lowly Unit 4 employee, by the way. As the boss, allegedly, there's no such thing as that, and I appreciate your work. But, you know, the reality is you mentioned mobility, and we have 15 to 18% of our student, our mobility rate is about 15 to 18%. So that's move-ins, move-outs, moving to different schools. That, and of about 9,000 students or a little bit more than 9,000 students, it's a fairly significant number. And it is critical that our districts, and, you know, you talked about the infrastructure issue. I can only speak to Champaign, but I drive through the little towns and see their schools also. And, you know, we could spend $60 million today on just renovations and keeping the schools modern. Without building new schools, without doing that, we could do that today. So I think you're right. The needs are huge in education throughout the state.
Yeah. Well, again, I want to thank the caller, and perhaps I should introduce again the guest. There might be some folks who have tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes and should know that we're talking with Dave Tomlinson. One reason he's interested in education is that he happens to be the president of the school board in Champaign. He's also a firefighter with the city of Champaign, and he is a candidate, Republican candidate, who will be in the primary next week in the 105th House District. That's represented now by Republican Shane Cultra. And so the two of them here are competing in the primary. One of them will get their party's nomination. And if things go as they have the past few years, chances are that means they will be the representative of
probably
the
very true.
Probably because there has been no Democrat. I guess there's no Democrats in the 105th.
Well, most of them are in Champaign County. There are a few scattered. I was looking at the voting records. I have a good friend who lives in Gibson City, and he told me his dad was the only Democrat in all of Ford County. And I told him that's not true because I actually met several when I was out campaigning, but I laughed when he told me that. But, yeah, it is a very Republican-dominated district. The Democrats are mainly concentrated in the Savoy-Champaign, Western Champaign area, and that's really a function of the districting that happens every 10 years. Where that's at, and it's a unique district because it has that slice of the largest community of Champaign and Savoy and the suburbs of Champaign, if you will, and also the very rural areas. There's about 30,000 people unincorporated in the district, about 30,000 in Champaign County, and then the rest is spread out through Pontiac. It's all of Ford County, most of Iroquois County. I get about 30,000 people in Champaign County. some of Livingston County, some of McLean County, some of Vermilion County.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that I ask you to talk about agriculture, since that's got to be the major industry in the 105th. What do you think should be the state's role in helping farmers? Does the state have a role in helping farmers?
Well, I think it absolutely has a role. I think the farm bill that a lot of people talk about is more of a federal issue. It's certainly being debated right now with the as has been for quite some time. I was listening to the another radio station the other morning about the farm bill, and they were disappointed that the president didn't bring that up in the State of the Union the other night. But I think as where our farm communities go is where the 105th goes. Ultimately, and we've got to see there's a tremendous amount of potential for growth in those areas, and using, you know, I'm a big believer in biofuels and using the soybeans and the corn that we have to invest in alternative energy. And we're growing big in wind energy also in the agricultural area. There's quite a few wind farms in existing now and being built every day. So I think that will lessen our dependence on oil, and we've got to reinvest in that. I think some of the great things that are happening in the university, we can marry those two together with the growing cycles of what is needed, and it really brings some solid growth. We've got to be able to keep input prices down for the farmer. The crop prices right now are superb. However, the corresponding prices for inputs have grown at a fairly significant rate. So people see $10 or higher beans and $5 corn, and they think they're making money hand and foot. And the reality is, but the prices have gone. I mean, look at they're paying $3 plus for diesel fuel like everyone else is, and they use a lot more. So we've got to keep the input fertilizer prices, those things down. I would certainly support extending and keeping the tax credit for farm inputs and not taxing those to whatever level that is now. The worst example of legislation that could have been passed to hurt the family farmer would have been the gross receipts tax. I'm very glad that got soundly defeated, and we've got to look at that because there's a lot of farmers that are over, because of the size of the land and the prices of land and the production, are certainly over that realm of, I believe it was about $1 million in receipts, that would have really hurt the farms, and I'm glad it was not passed. You know, gone are the days of the 200 to 400 acre family farm that's supporting a whole family. We need to make sure that we're not doing anything worse. It's going to make the family farm even more difficult than it is now. For example, the estate taxes and death taxes. You can have 400 acres of ground and at $4,000 to $6,000, depending on where you're at or higher, you could very easily be paying a heck of a lot of its inheritance tax on something like that. So the sons and daughters of farmers are going to be not farmers anymore if those things aren't dealt with. So we just got to make sure that those are down. And I think ethanol plants are certainly a possibility and growing and keeping in the Watsika, Hoopston area along the U.S. 2040 corridor that's had some real depressed times economically. If we can look at whatever we can to help grow, and I think agribusiness is obviously the way it's going to happen.
Well, is there anything in particular in the way of state programs that would involve the state spending money on anything that was involved in either helping farmers increase productivity or doing something that would help to create other kinds of markets or other kinds of demands for the product?
Sure. I think the biggest thing off the top of my head would probably be continuing and increasing research dollars in agribusiness. I mean, sitting here on the campus, it's clear that that's the reason this college was created, this university, and they do a great job. And continuing and even enhancing research dollars from the state is a good thing. Chicago State is not the flagship university of Illinois, unlike the senator from Chicago believes, but we need to continue to increase funding here. You know, if we look at export markets and making sure that we are playing in the export markets and making our products attractive to the world markets, we need to make sure we're going to do that and keep taxes low internally to do that.
We have certainly a couple of minutes left. Someone wants to call real quick. We can get in and call her. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. Certainly, as a Republican, you would be going into a difficult situation, assuming that, well, the governor is still going to be a Democrat, assuming that we still have Democratic majorities in both chambers, that would mean that you would be going into the minority. How do you work in a situation like that to try to get anything done?
Well, I think there are things you never compromise on. You know, I'm very pro-life. That's one I don't compromise on. I'm for the rights of people to own guns, as the Second Amendment of the Constitution talks about. I don't feel like compromising on that is an issue that I'm going to cross. But I think pretty much everything else is a negotiation. You know, mm-hmm. we've got to work together. Too often in our state, because of the aisle, we sit there and think that, okay, it was a Republican idea or a Democrat idea, so we're not going to support it for the other one. And that's just not a good way of doing business. We've got 12 million people in our state that are either Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Green, and we work for all of them in the legislature. And I think that's where I've been able to, in my life with the school board, bring people together. And even in some previous things, bringing constituents together and talk to, I don't believe that I should just listen to one interest group or one group of anybody. If I did that on the school board, there'd be 90,000 people very disappointed that I'm listening to five people, allowing them to run the district versus, the squeaky wheel gets greased, but there's a whole lot of the wheels that need to be listened to also. So we've got to work together and stop strong-arming or straight-arming the other side, both on the Democratic side and whether you're on management, labor side, either side. You've got to really get into the idea that we're going to work together instead of working against each other.
We do have one more caller here. Somebody has on a cell phone, so we want to make sure we get them here. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify something that your speaker mentioned earlier, and that was that Champaign School District Special Ed Department was serving people from the outlying small communities. Because all the communities in Champaign County have their own special ed programs and their own special ed personnel that service them through the rural Champaign County Special Ed Co-op. And if they do send a student to Champaign, I believe they tuition him in. Isn't that right?
There is some that's a combination of both things. There certainly is special education departments through the rural co-op, as you mentioned, through ROE. But we also the tuition in is not entirely. There are some that are tuitioned in, but private schools. If you live in another community and you send your child to say Judah or some other, that you don't tuition in that way that I'm aware of. That I was told the other night that was the case, and so I think it's a combination of both of those. But certainly I don't mean to imply with anybody that no other school districts have special education services. That's absolutely not true. We certainly have the largest because we are the largest, and we do serve several other children from other districts.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that I don't believe it, because I think even the rarer cases of certain special ed services are able to be serviced by the rural Champaign County Special Ed mm-hmm. Co-op usually. Okay, thank
you. Thank you.
Just as a way of finishing up, we have a minute or so. Is there, in terms of major capital projects downstate, particularly in East Central Illinois, is there anything that you would see as a major pressing need, that this is something that really needs to be done and that the state's going to have to find some significant amount of money to do that?
Well, the first thing I probably would have done is started Curtis Road a week earlier, so it could have been done. but having said that, I think that we've got to take a look at the bridges and the infrastructure throughout. If you're driving down some of the smaller roads, they get pretty rough. And these are state roads, you know, with 49 and 47, Highway 1 and others. We've got to look at the roads. And certainly schools are crumbling around us. And I would be amenable to, you know, particularly in the area of Dwight, the mental health facilities really need to have some serious state work, as do the prisons. Some of the prisons in Joliet and Dwight, which the Joliet prison is actually not in the district, but there's a tremendous amount of employees that are located there. The Dwight prison is. We've really got to look at those prisons to make sure that they are safe, well-staffed, and that the capital bills are allowing the infrastructure to not be falling down and making an unsafe environment for them.
Well, that's, you know, workers. I think for some time now, there have been people all around the country saying, look, we have really neglected infrastructure. And we're talking about things like roads and bridges and canals and waterways and all of the things, very, very basic things that we use in our everyday mm-hmm. life and the economy depends on, that we haven't been investing in maintaining those things, and we haven't been doing this for a long time.
Right.
And it's one of those things that it's kind of hard to get people excited about, you know, road repair and bridge maintenance and things like
right.
that. I mean, how do you really get across to people the idea that this is important, and not only is it important, but it's something we've got
right.
to spend the money on.
We've got to keep preaching the message, if you will, that government has functions, and their functions are keep people safe, to provide roads and that type of thing. And that's what government needs to focus on. We need to get off of everything else that we do. We need to focus on what we can do well, and provide safety and security for the people of the district. We can provide roads and economic engines. You know, the Watseka flooding. I don't know what much about why it was flooded. I know it's happened many times before, but you know, Villa Grove doesn't flood anymore because they did some stuff with it, and Green Street doesn't flood. Nobody jet skis on Green Street anymore. Now, am I advocating a $30 million hole? Probably not. But if that's a solution, it might be. Yeah. We just need to look at that and make sure that we're providing the basic services that the state should provide, not the feel-good stuff that gets on the news.
Well, there, we're going to have to leave it next week on the Republican primary. We have two Republicans who are competing for their party's nomination in the 105th House District. Dave Tomlinson, our guest this morning. The incumbent, Shane Cultra, he will also be on the ballot, and he'll be on our program tomorrow, and we'll give you the opportunity to do the same thing, ask questions and hear what he has to say. Our guest is, in addition to being candidate for the Illinois legislature, Dave Tomlinson is the president of the Champaign School Board, and he's also a firefighter in the city of Champaign. Thank you very much.
It's been great to be here. Thank you very much.